Hello, everyone. It's Dan Bossi at Old Folks Talk Grain and ready for another episode of What's Going On in the World of Agriculture. We're coming to you this week from a different location. Geneva, Switzerland is where I'm at. We're not going to have a guest this week, which makes it a little interesting, but we're going to talk about the conference that we just held. Years ago, I decided that it was good to have a grain conference pulling together all of the world's leaders in grains to talk about the issues of the day, to also get reflections upon the market, reflections on weather, trade, and really the items that were driving trade. Now, we chose Geneva, Switzerland, because it is absolutely the hub of global grain trading. We think of Chicago often as being the futures markets for the world, and they are. But when you think of cash grain trading, there's really two hubs that have developed. It's still in the developing stage, which is Dubai. And then, of course, the next one being here in Geneva. And it really is the reason that it works for all time zones, in that you can get cash grain business done in the Far East. You can still be up at night for maybe what Chicago is doing. And so you can have a very long day and still be able to trade cash and futures and put it all together to have a contract. And here in Switzerland, it is about cash grain trading, and in particular, Black Sea trading. So let me kind of dive in here of the subjects that we covered. It was a very robust meeting. We had over 620 different delegates attend GrainCom, which is the name of the event. GrainCom here in Geneva, Switzerland. GrainCom 23 had visitors from really all over the world. I think some of the farthest came from Australia, China, of course, Canada, the United States, and a fair amount of them from Latin America. So we spent the last 2.5 days really going over the grain markets. We started here with Iran and the sanctions that are being placed on Iranian government and trade. There's about 60 vessels that have been stuck in Iran trying to offload wheat and other grains for weeks and weeks, and actually some go all the way back to the last July. And the reason they haven't offloaded is that they haven't been able to be paid. And the government is not releasing those cargoes to free them to go back out to international waters. And so the vessel owners, the Iranian government, trade officials, millers, people were here to discuss the problem. It's a lot of money involved in this 60 vessels that are caught. Some worry that the grain on cargo is no longer the quality that was originally spec'd. But as we looked at it and dove deep, and it really seems to be done due to the sanctions. Of course, sanctions placed upon Iran because of their their worsening position in global politics and their radicalness that they have. This makes banking with the Iranian central bank very difficult, and bringing in goods almost impossible. So they were talking about partial unloads, giving Iran credit, which is always difficult. And everybody tried to discuss how in the future would Iran feed itself. It's been suffering through many droughts and has an acute shortage of grains and foods in general. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But that is how we spent the first half day, if you will, discussing Iran grain. We then moved into a discussion that I presented. We talked about the macroeconomics around the world, and we then went back to look at the situations of which in the Chicago and Paris markets, how the money was leaving, where whether it be an index fund or a trading fund or even a small speculator, Chicago has been witnessing a leaving of money. And when you think about that, that has not been good for the marketplace and has caused issues, at least going forward. We talked about the roles of central banks globally, how they have been hammering on demand. Of course, what the world really needs more of is it needs more of raw materials. It needs more stuff. We need more grain. We need more ocean vessels. We need more metals. We need more petroleum. But the only card that world central banks can play is the card of demand destruction through rising rates. And so rates have been increasing a record amount from last June to where we sit here today. It's been the quickest elevator ride up that we can find in modern history. And it has had an impact on demand. I think if we look back at global grain demand, we're going to find out that it's about 2% less on a consumptive basis, not a trade basis, but a consumptive basis than where we sat last year. Now, the interesting aspect that was brought up by the trade here is that every year that we've had a drop in global grain consumption, and there's about four or five of them, they happen every 3 to 5 years, normally associated with a drought, you tend to get a very sharp snapback in demand the year following. So it's not that any of us eat any less food, and so for some of us, that's unfortunate. But it's really that, you know, when you think about grain trading, an end user, a miller, a livestock consumer can utilize what's in the bin. He can take down inventory. He can reduce his cash inventory. And that would then, of course, count against global declines in demand. So that seems to be going on. And we would imagine we'll continue here until we make some kind of bottom in the world economy, which was forecast somewhere between the July and October timeframe. Thereafter, we see a very sharp snapback in demand, sometimes as much as 80 or 85 million metric tons in that crop year. So we left with the feeling that a bottom should come in relatively early in the grain markets, followed by a rather significant increase in demand as we look forward to the last quarter of the year and then much of 2024. We also had presentations that were highly anticipated. We had some climate forecasts that were put out by Scott Youkness and Dr. Olivia Kellner. These were forecasts that were made on weather looking outwards for the next couple of decades. So what is the world going to look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now in terms of climate? And I don't want to say it was apocalyptic, but as we all kind of sat in the audience and gandered at their presentations, we were left with kind of an awe that, you know, as we have two or three times as many droughts and acute floods, as we have global temperatures rising even more than where we are today, as climate's not being mitigated. And again, I do not want to get into the political discussion of who created the increase in global temperatures or climate change, if you will. It was debated. Some here, of course, said, well, it was an act of God. Others said it was man-made. And that's really not for GrainCom to decide. We as grain traders have the function of feeding the world and finding the cheapest and most abundant supplies to get that done. And so we were more focused upon, you know, what does the world do? What will happen? And where do we go forward? Dr. Kellner gave some stark warnings about crop nutrients being washed away in the acute flooding. And she really wanted to hammer home the idea of preservation of topsoil. Because as you have these extreme rain events, the loss of topsoil and soil fertility is going to be very, very important for the world. And then on the other side of that, desertification is going to be more widespread. She's looking for the world to be more covered in water, to be more, of course, arid and warm. Yes, crop areas are moving north into the northern and southern hemispheres. But as you think about the overall movement to the north into Canada, Russia, maybe Norway or some of these more northern points, the soil fertility cannot keep up with the yield that is produced farther south. So she made those points very aptly. Then Scott Youkness, who's a climate scientist, came on board. And Scott talked about the warming oceans. In other words, as energy comes into the world from the sun, the earth, there's really needs to be absorbed. It needs to go somewhere. It just isn't dissipated or lost. And so our oceans are generally absorbing that extra warmth, transmitting it into what he called, it's kind of a strange name, warm and cold blobs across our oceans. And Scott produced a very compelling new climate research project that he and others have been working on, in which these warm blobs then establish what we would call stagnant weather patterns that seem to hold on not for weeks or months, but sometimes in the case of like Argentina this winter, or maybe even the Plains drought this last year, hang on for years. And his point was taken very well, as we had some Argentinians here in the audience, in that rarely do we see the type of fertility in soils that we saw in Argentina that would have the kind of losses that were suffered in the last growing cycle. The importance of having back-to-back dry years or drought years should not be underestimated in terms of crops. And so all of that became very important. I think that in a general sense, he was warning the trade that, you know, we need to be more focused on not El Nino or La Nina, but maybe these cold and warm ocean blobs, because as jet streams slow in the northern and southern hemisphere, these ocean patterns then produce stagnation of weather patterns that hang on for literally years, that gives us a dramatic change in climate. Now, hopefully the patterns do break down after time, but the persistence that he was showing was something that I think scared some traders. And we came away having more of a view of maybe as we get into key growing cycles, what you see is what you get. In the case of Argentina, Brazil last year, Brazil had favorable weather. Argentina suffering from a second year of drought, a drought that really hung on for almost 2 years. And only now looks like it may be breaking. Dr. Kellner and Scott Euknis identified then the problem areas that they foresaw in the growing season ahead. And they were more numerous and widespread than I think the grain trade wanted to see. Itemizations of locations were the Black Sea, in particular Russian spring and portions of their winter wheat belt, maybe the Ukrainian corn and winter wheat crops, and then things like looking at places like India, looking at places like the central United States and Canadian prairies. And they made a very a strong statement that they also thought the Gulf Stream in the Atlanta was weakening, and that could produce a numerous episodes of flooding and weather problems, including drought for portions of Europe. So a rather troubling forecast from Dr. Kellner and Scott Euknis that really caught the trade's attention. Scott and Dr. Kellner really did worry the room in terms of longer term weather and what the challenges are ahead for world agriculture. So we'll leave it at that. We understood in the room, and traders get that, you know, long range weather forecasts are something that we should keep in mind, but it really gets down to the 2 week forecast in terms of what we all do in the industry and kind of go forward from there. We also had a Black Sea grain panel, which was kind of interesting. We had a representative from the Ukraine Grain Export Association, Nikolai Gorbachev, and then we had Dmitry Roiko of ICAR of Russia, along with other panel members that were really good. They debated, of course, what was going to be happening with the corridor. The Ukrainians argued strongly that they needed the corridor, and they wanted it to be open for an extended period of time, not these 2 to 3 month extensions, because with each extension, ships either come or leave, and it just, produces some real, improper flow of grain through the Black Sea. Now, that being said, they also enlightened that crop production probably will be down throughout the Black Sea. The Ukrainians were talking smaller corn seedings and smaller corn production, maybe a rise in oilseed production, including soybeans, rapeseed, and of course, sunflowers. But winter and spring wheat was also going to be down. And so the exports, if you will, out of the Ukraine will be sharply diminished from last year because they're not selling old crop stocks. And so this is something that the world market will be paying more attention to. In Russia, they also lighted upon spring wheat areas being dry and that the winter wheat crop is far from made. June and July will be the most important months forthcoming. And we need to watch weather there very, very carefully. So Russia and the EU still have large caches of old crop wheat. Both countries are, of course, duking it out, if you will, in terms of the world market. But in case of Russia, the traders there indicated that each time they wanted to sell below the $275 FOB price, kind of as established by the government, that they had to get permission from the government to do that. So the thought process of a grain board circulated, though again, we don't know how that grain board will navigate once prices get above $275, Bob, because at that point, you won't need permission. So a lot of bantering back and forth between the room in Russia in terms of what that'll all look like. As we got on into the day, we then spent a fair amount of time talking about what I would say was the geopolitical aspects of the market. We had two key speakers, Braz Barzaki and George Mia from Australia. Braz is from Brazil. And then I moderated. And the key there going was that the WTO delegates wanted the room to know, or the conference to know, that indeed they looked at the world differently. The world used to be the United States, and then countries in the WTO or UN surrounded around the United States. They now talked about not that type of relationship, but a duopoly where it was China and the United States of the WTO. And that countries were lining up in a regional fashion around both of those. Now, that has big implications for the WTO and the world working order in terms of the UN and politics. It'll be watched very, very carefully. But these were significant changes that everyone wanted to at least focus upon. No one at the moment really understood how that would impact regional trade. So agricultural trade could be bantered about, let's say, of Asia, maybe Brazil, and then the North America and Europe. But that solidarity in trade was not yet evident. But WTO members also wanted to echo that, you know, as trade goes forward here, getting new approvals of the technological advances takes a long time. In terms of the EU, it takes a decade. So when you think about getting a new variety or a new technological advance, the ability of WTO, UN, and various trade bodies to give it approval is a lengthy, lengthy process. Now, as the world gets into maybe climate issues, this becomes very important in terms of how quickly we can get approvals forthcoming. The delegates that were there, Braz and George, both indicated that they would like more participation in the WTO from the world grain industry. They thought it was very key. It's now time that we stand up. And really, they had a call to action that world agriculture needed to get more involved in the WTO as this duopoly was forming in terms of the power of the WTO and how it's all shifting. As we went into the end of the day, we spent some time then talking about the derivatives market. We had a advanced trading program that Paul Drevriak provided, and where was the best risk management profile in terms of the various European and Black Sea wheat contracts. We know in Chicago that Kansas City wheat these days is really marching to its own drought drum, if you will, low crop, tight stocks, high prices. That is not a place for Europe or the Black Sea to be hedging wheat. So they looked at the relationships with Matif and the cash relationships. We spent a lot of time diving into where would the best opportunities really were, but it seemed like, at least for now, it wasn't in Chicago. So that was kind of a change from prior years. Lastly, we ended up in terms of consumers and what they were looking for in the future. Consumers had some coverage in the portions of the Middle East and looking then all the way down into the Southeast Asian area. They maybe had coverage into about July or August, but everybody, because of the sagging profile of price, particularly in the world wheat market, was not taking an extended period of forward coverage. They wanted to stay close bought, maybe 60 or 90 days. But if the market provided an opportunity as it got closer to seasonal lows, which usually come in the month of July, then they were willing to step forward and take coverage longer term. But we were kind of surprised, whether it was Egypt or some of the other key importers, that there wasn't bigger books in place in terms of coverage of their end needs. Now, some of this could be related to currency shortages. Some of it could be related to rising credit and rising interest rates. But at the end, everybody was relatively close bought. I think a lot of it had to do with, of course, the sagging price profile of corn and soy prices and wheat prices that have been evident in recent months, and that there was no encouragement for a buyer to buy forward and then lose money. The only encouragement was that at some point in the future, a seasonal low would be formed and we'd go higher from there. As we turn the page and look at the upcoming other days, we spent a lot of time, again, revisiting weather, Kyle Tapley from Maxar came forward and put up forecasts where he was concerned about the Canadian prairies and a drought in the north central U.S. He also had a bullseye on the Black Sea in terms of dryness in the spring wheat areas of Russia, extending southwards to winter wheat areas. And then he also looked aggressively for maybe a problem with the Indian monsoon, which would extend all the way into Australia and include some of the palm areas of Indonesia and Malaysia. So lots to talk about there, but his most confidence was that Australia, Indonesia, and India would have droughts or weather issues that would significantly reduce crop production. Now, it has been a long, long time that we've had a weather issue in India, monsoon failure. I hate to even use that word. That would be tremendously important for the world vegetable oil markets, as India is the largest importer of veg oils. And then if you include palm oil having some issues, I guess one really has to stay on top of the soy oil and vegetable oil markets as we head into the end of the year. We then followed that with a discussion on the world freight market. World freight rates have been coming down. They look to be, of course, stabilizing, maybe forming a bottom here in the month of May. Container trade was, rates were well off of where we were a year ago. However, again, no real bottom that they could signal or point to in terms of world freight. Lastly, we ended up on the regulatory side of things, because with every good grain trade comes a good lawyer to make sure that execution is prompt and execution is taken care of. Of course, sanctions. There's now 55 countries around the world that are being sanctioned in some form or fashion. This is causing major headaches for world agricultural trade. And so as you think about what has happened in the sanctions applied to Russia, and then we spread that east and west, that was a lot of that discussion point. Then we, of course, worked the blockchain and some of the new execution platforms for cash grain trading that were out there, and how that were scaling vertically but not horizontally, not being readily adopted by the grain industry. And so that was something that was disappointing, because a few years ago, we thought blockchain was the hot item, but it really hasn't been adapting as quickly as everybody had thought. In summary, it was a really good grain meeting. I think everybody learned a ton. I think there was a lack of consensus. When we did a survey across the room asking if people were bullish or bearish of markets, I think it came back overwhelmingly bearish in terms of the votes. The hands were held high. When we asked people who were bullish, there were very few and far between. So today, the market seemed to be biased to the downside. Whether or not that will change, I think, is really dependent upon Mother Nature and how we get into the new growing season and where we come from there. But a very good meeting, lots of interactions. And of course, the big beauty of these kinds of meetings is to be face-to-face, to make new relationships, and to establish, let's say, a friendlier environment than what we might have during COVID. So a quick update from here in Geneva. I hope everybody is well. I hope you have a good week ahead. And as we come back in the coming weeks, we'll get back more in trajectory and interviewing a old man or old folk or old woman and talking about their wisdom and what they can impart relative to the market. For now, it's Dan Bossi. Wish you a good week. We'll be back with you with a new broadcast again next week.